Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks for joining us. It's 2013, and that marks the 10-year anniversary of the Peace Talks radio program that was born here in New Mexico at KUNM. Joining us to discuss the program and share their insights and experiences and to take your calls and questions today, Paul Ingalls and Suzanne Kreider, co-founders of the program. Also, Carol Boss, our producer of the program. Thanks to all of you for joining us today.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks, Elaine.
So, hi, Suzanne.
Hello.
So, I wanted to start off first by asking Paul and Suzanne to just briefly explain what was the seed, what was the seed that was planted for you two that led to this program, to creating this program. How did it come about?
You want to tag team this one with me, Suzanne?
Will do.
Okay. Well, it did come out of 9/11 in a sense, because Suzanne and I were married at the time, and we were dealing with the emotion of that event like anyone else. And I think after a period of confusion and mourning, we started having conversations about, you know, what could we do to respond, as we were sure to be going into a period of time where war and conflict and violence was going to be dominating the media landscape, especially. And we started with lots of different ideas. I don't know, Suze, you want to talk about some of the earlier notions that we had?
Well, yeah, I think the main thing is we looked at the show as an alternative. So we saw radio and TV news as really violent. And what we wanted to do was offer people an alternative, because we knew people were making peace. We didn't know how. And so we started in New Mexico with things like parenting, race relations. We started also with the Department of Peace. Right, Paul?
Yeah, those were among the first shows that that we did when we started a half-hour local series on KUNM. I can also remember that initially we had talked about doing a number of large live events. I think maybe that was the first sort of iteration of it, was to rent an auditorium. I think we talked about like going around the country and renting an auditorium in different places and trying to talk with really big names in peacemaking and conflict resolution in front of an audience. I think initially we might have just thought about, I don't know, was it like 10 programs? We sat down and tried to figure out how much that would cost and what that would take. Kind of got sticker shock. And then realizing that, you know, to do it well, you have to get funding for it. And if you don't have a track record, then people aren't going to fund you. So we started small. And the first 2 years, we just volunteered to produce a monthly show, a half hour on KUNM, primarily talking with folks in our community who work in nonviolence and conflict resolution.
Suzanne, what is one of those early interviews that you remember that was meaningful to you, that made you feel like, yes, this is what we wanted to be doing?
Well, it would be the very first one, and that was with Eric Kolvig. Now, that one we did live, like Paul said, we did in front of a studio audience, and I was really nervous. I remember I had just come back from a retreat, like 9 days of silence, and Eric looked at me and he said, "Don't worry, it'll be fine." And it was called Making Peace with Ourselves After 9/11, and he was awesome. That was when I said, "Oh my gosh, I really want to give peace to everybody."
Some listeners may know who Eric Kolvig is, but can you explain who he is?
Yeah, he is a meditation teacher, and so he's really steeped in Buddhism, and he knew how to explain to people what you do when you're really nervous and you're feeling anxiety about 9/11 or getting on a plane or anything. He was really super, and all of our shows are archived on Peace Talks Radio. So the very first show with him is even archived.
Suze, we have a clip from that show, and I think it's delightful because we can both hear the nervousness in your voice, but also a little bit of the wisdom of Eric Kolvig. So let's listen to that now.
Okay.
we're all faced with these ongoing threats of more terrorist attacks. And I notice myself, I worry a lot, particularly when I'm traveling. So what helps you the most to manage this kind of worry and to maintain inner calm?
One of my teachers once said to me, if you want peace, if you want to be happy, then develop a heart that is ready for anything. Easy to say, but I think for me in part, developing inner peace in challenging times, keeping our heart open in hell, which sometimes we're called to do, means really engaging fear, really engaging the anxiety itself immediately.
Engaging the anxiety. When I get anxiety, boy, I'm sweating, my heart is pounding.
Right.
How do I engage that?
Well, you know, it's Franklin Roosevelt, when he first became president, his very first words to this country are the ones that are most memorable. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. This was in the middle of the Great Depression. A lot of people were suffering. In order to get past fear, to work our way through fear, we have to engage it directly to see what it is. Fear is always about something in the future. It's never about something that's happening in the moment. The future doesn't exist. Fear is a projection of something that may or may not happen. And when you see that, if you can see you're simply projecting something into the future, you don't have to believe it. You can say, I don't need to believe this. And to come back to whatever your present situation, no matter how challenging it is, by reducing the fear, your present situation is much more workable. Just one little example is years ago I was doing some deep therapeutic work and I was working with some severe trauma that I had as a child. And as a result of doing that work, terror actually came up. And not just in the therapeutic situation. So I was driving to work one day and I was experiencing terror. My hair was standing straight up, you know, that there were these waves of energy going through my body. Very intense experience. My mind happened to be strong at that moment, and so I knew it was just fear, and I was able to hold it. So as I just held fear there and just kept driving, I got to work, and a coworker greeted me and said, how are you doing? And I said, well, I'm experiencing terror right now, but otherwise I'm fine. And it was true. In that moment, I didn't have to believe the terror. And so it was possible to feel all the physiological reactions and all of the contraction in the mind and say, okay, this is just fear.
The work is a way to identify and question the thoughts that cause all the...
Fade it down, yeah.
So that was a clip from the first episode, was it, with Eric? Or one of the first episodes with Eric Kolvig?
It was actually our pilot episode. Mm-hmm. It was a program, though, that was distributed nationally because there was a national... Radio Consortium effort to produce programs a year after 9/11. So we taped that in July of 2002, and it aired around the country around September.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I feel really good about that program, and Suzanne and I kind of disagreed about, you know, Eric as a guest at first. Of course, it came out so well. And I think looking back now, it was just the perfect place to start our journey on Peace Talks because we sort of look at a response to conflict as concentric circles. And while everybody at that time was all abuzz about what to do in Afghanistan, Iraq, and all these faraway places, really the work has to start, you know, with how each one of us are dealing with either that specific conflict or all the other conflicts that go on in our lives. And so it was a very central place to begin. And then I think it was sort of a natural progression that as we added shows on, and you can just sort of look at the titles, you know, the next show or the first one in the series was about peaceful parenting and then race relations and how we interact with each other. But then sometimes we'd always come back to how do we interact with ourselves and how we can address our own conflicts that way. And it felt very authentic, and it was really a great place to start.
Let me bring Carol Boss into the conversation at this point. Carol, you've done quite a few interviews over the years with a broad range of people on episodes of Peace Talks Radio. Do you enjoy more the interviews with folks where you're talking about working on inner peace, or the interviews where you're talking about people who are trying to create peace in communities or countries or on a global level? Is there kind of a type of interview that you enjoy more?
Well, I certainly enjoy both, and we all know that what has been said and is so true, if we want peace in the world, it has to begin within ourselves. But I will say that in my years of doing this program, what draws me are the stories of forgiveness. And those are the things I most, I think, are so powerful. And are actually forgiveness being, I was thinking about this last night, sort of the highest manifestation of love. And I have, I've done a few programs that for me are, when you go to the core of it, it's about forgiveness. There are stories of compassion and reconciliation and courage and people who come together and face the individuals who were their former quote-unquote enemy and embrace them. So I'm talking in generalities now, but those are the stories that draw me in and provide stories, which we so encourage from all of our guests. The personal stories are what draw all of you, the listeners, in.
And well, this kind of modeling of behavior that's
yes.
hard to contemplate in the context of terror or pain. It's hard to contemplate forgiveness if you've been wronged or abused in some way. It's hard to go past that point. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and we're joined this morning by the co-founders and a producer of Peace Talks Radio, which you hear here on KUNM the last Friday of every month at 8 a.m. Periodically, we also have an hour-long special. The show is an hour-long show. We air a half-hour-long version on Friday morning at 8, the last Friday of each month. And do you have questions for the producers of this show about how this work has affected them and their lives? What kinds of stories you've heard on the program and what they have meant to you in your life? Have you perhaps created a bit of peace in your life or your community or in a relationship that was planted, that was a seed that was planted upon hearing the show? We'd love to hear from you this morning. The number to call locally here in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can post your comments online, and you can also email callinshow@kunm.org. And let's go to Glenn in Hemis Springs. Good morning, Glenn. You're on the air.
Well, and Suzanne, thank you so much for this. I have listened to your presentations for years and really appreciate them. I'm going to go to Palestine, Israel in about 5 days, and this is meaning a lot just to hear what you're saying today. I have a question that I would like to put to you. If you were confronted on the streets of Albuquerque with somebody who is violent today, how would you personally respond? And then secondly, if you were sitting in some of these Senate hearings in Washington, D.C., where they're wanting to keep the assault weapons going, how would you respond in that situation? And I'll listen to you on the radio. Thanks again.
No fair. Carol's pointing to me.
I was going to say Paul, too. But, you know, Paul, go ahead. We'll go around the circle. What do you think?
I don't know. When they asked John Lennon, you know, what would he do if he met someone on the street who's violent, he'd say, I'd run. And he said, I might be calling back over my shoulder, peace, brother, peace.
I was going to say that too, but I'm glad you got to say that John Lennon would have done the same thing.
It's hard to say because I know it's a little bit of a hypothetical question, but I lose my stuff, you know. When I get frustrated and upset, you know, it's a work in progress for all of us. And I think one part, and I'm not trying to not answer the question, but I will refer back to some of the shows. I know that Suzanne's done a couple of shows on the neuroscience of getting along and compassion and understanding what our brain does with what's going on around us can really help to modify our behaviors about how we would respond to something that looks like a threat in the street but maybe isn't, or looks like a threat someplace else. Suzanne had a great story in one of her shows about, you know, standing in line at the post office.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Suzanne, in the shows that you've produced with this exploration of how our physiological existence impacts our behavior and how our bodies respond to what we may perceive as threats, what are some of the things that the peacemakers that you've spoken to over the years, what are the, some of the things that people might say if you are confronted with someone who appears to be threatening violence against you in the street? What are some of the ways to try to grow in that experience and not perpetuate that violence?
Yes, thank you. Well, Glenn, I think it's a really good question. Thank you so much for going to Palestine. It's awesome. The people who helped me the most, I think, were people who talked about NVC. That's nonviolent communication. And I'm finding that I use a lot. I say, oh, you feel. Now, there's no different in my needs and someone else's needs. So if I met someone on the street who was violent, or if I was talking to someone about guns, oh my gosh, it's so hard. I would probably lose my stuff too. But I think interviewing Jorge Rubio and interviewing Marjorie Rosenberg about nonviolent communication and how the people who have guns have needs. They need to be protected and they feel safer. So I would probably try to touch on their needs and my needs, because I think that those are the two people, Jorge and Marshall, who helped me the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Marshall Rosenberg's books about nonviolent communication have some remarkable stories about people who are actually in a violent situation, like where I think there's one where, you know, a mentally disturbed fellow who was trying to get into a bed overnight.
Like a shelter.
A shelter home, right. Mm-hmm. There were no beds, and he got totally upset. All he wanted was a bed for the night, but he had a knife, and he kind of came over the counter at the, you know, receptionist, and somehow she knew about this and, you know, with a knife at her throat, essentially, was able to talk him down about his needs, you know, and to find out something about why he was reacting this way. I mean, it takes an incredible mind and a presence of mind to be able to do that. I would say that the first thing you do is not far from what I lightheartedly referred to John Lennon. I said, protect yourself. You know, you don't have to change it. But sometimes you're in a situation where you can't, you know. And I think Suzanne and Marshall's point is recognizing that the person has needs. Even the discussion about gun violence. And it points to something that we try to get to at Peace Talks Radio, is to take an upstream approach to every issue.
And by upstream, what do you mean?
The example that I can best point to in one of the programs that we did started with a personal story. One of the guys that I play basketball with twice a week was an English professor here at UNM who was murdered by his girlfriend's ex-boyfriend. She and he were both killed. And it, of course, wiped me out. And it's it was an invitation to look at dating violence and domestic violence. But the typical reporting about any of these violent acts is about the monster who perpetrated them. Who was this person? He was sick. He was disturbed. And then after you've established the fact that he had a mental health history or something, the story kind of goes away. So the upstream approach really is the parable that I won't tell it exactly right, but, you know, there's a story about a town by a river, and all of a sudden they start noticing dead bodies are washing up on the shore and floating in the river, and they go to all kinds of elaborate means to try to figure out how to fish these bodies out of the water instead of going upstream and finding out what pushed them in the first place. So on that particular program that we did about domestic violence, I decided we should go upstream and find out where are the people who are growing up into the 30-year-old mad ex-boyfriends, are they not learning something about relationships? And there is a program in Canada, sadly there aren't that many of them in the U.S., that goes into the schools and teaches a fourth R program, the fourth R being relationships. And it's a class, you know, and it's something that's part of the intentional conversation of school.
I could have used that class.
We all could.
We all could have used that class,
yeah,
right?
Right. So, you know, that's the upstream approach, is to think about, you know, not how do we lock this person up necessarily, not to say that we, you know, that there's not some value in all those things, but how do we start having this conversation when our young people are 12 and 13 years old and starting to get interested in dating and that sort of thing? How do we do that? That's critical to me, and I think we ask ourselves that question and are going to continue to ask ourselves that question even this year as we review the gun violence discussion. Carol and I are talking about a program about that, but that's one of the things that we really want to challenge ourselves to do.
Paul Engels is producer and co-founder of Peace Talks Radio. Carol Boss is a producer with the show, and Suzanne Kreider also joins us this morning. She is also a co-founder and producer of the show. And we'd like to hear from you this morning. How has that show impacted you? Is there a particular story that you heard on an episode of Peace Talks Radio that really moved you? And I know that Paul has brought in a clip from one of the ones that's one of my favorite ones, which we'll hear from shortly. But we are going to take a quick break. If you'd like to call in, the number is 277-5866. That's locally here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can send an email to callinshow@kunm.org or post your comments online. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Summer Prep offers more than 90 academic arts, sports, and outdoor classes for K through 12, including Mandarin, mathematics, science, musical theater, and all-day camps for young children. Visit sandiaprep.org. This message sponsored by Sandia Prep School, a tax-exempt organization.
I'm Stephen Spitz, the host of New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. From economic development to income inequality, the supposed answer to New Mexico's problems is to improve education. This Friday morning at 8 a.m., we ask how you can realistically do that when more than 70% of our newborns qualify for Medicaid. Our guests are former New Mexico Education Secretary Dr. Veronica Garcia and pediatrician Dr. Andrew Shi, who heads an early childhood program at UNM Hospital. This Friday morning at 8 a.m.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We've got the co-founders and producers of Peace Talks Radio here today. The show is celebrating its 10th anniversary. The show has also received several prizes, including two of the Paul Ray Peace Prizes. I'll maybe ask Paul Engels to explain the prize itself. But talking about how this work that you three do to put this show together has affected you personally. I'm wondering, Suzanne, when you look back at this decade of producing the show, what is maybe the deepest and most impactful area of your life that has been affected?
Oh, wow. Well, I try not to lose it, but I often do. And I always try to go back to, you know, having my own feelings and hopefully letting the other person have their feelings. Somehow we think conflict is bad. Conflict isn't bad. It gets the truth out. So it's affected me in terms of being a little bit more honest. I think when Paul and I were married, we came with the idea of the show, and I often say it was the only child that we had. So it affected me deeply in that I feel like it's the legacy that Paul and I have given to the world. We said, look, this is what's important to us. We're not that good at it, but we know other people are really trying. Thanks.
How, in those early days, how were you selecting the folks that you were choosing to interview on the show? Paul?
Well, Paul really wanted to, I'll let Paul talk about this, but he really wanted to keep it pure. And that's why I had a fight about Eric. Because Eric is Buddhist, and Paul felt that, oh, we shouldn't have a Buddhist on. But we wanted people originally who were in New Mexico, but over the years we realized that nationally and internationally there were people who were making peace that we wanted on the show.
What else, Paul?
Paul, was that your?
Well, I want to clarify. It wasn't that I had a aversion to having Buddhists on the program. I thought it was. Well, no, I think it was the fact that the first show that we were going to be putting out nationally, I didn't want it to be to sound like we were choosing a religion, a religious take on things. Now, the thing with Eric is that he's just a pure philosophical thinker who happens to be Buddhist in my mind. I mean, that's where it came down to being a perfect program. But I think that when she says that I wanted it to be pure, we take the tagline of our program seriously, in that the program is about peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. That's a pretty broad plate to work with, or canvas to paint on. So I challenge all of us as hosts, when we're thinking about programs, can we bring this back to that? Is it about making peace? Is it about conflict resolution? And I think Carol's gotten frustrated with me sometimes to try to force that connection a little bit in something that is clearly something that's good for the community. So if it's good for the community, it's good for reducing conflict and fostering peace. But I think it's important for us, since that's our mission, to make sure that connection is very clear, so that it doesn't seem like just sort of a broadly defined public affairs program.
Carol.
Well, I think I've gotten frustrated with you over some things, Paul, but I don't know if that's exactly it, because for me, I've been able to doing this program has allowed me to make discoveries, I wouldn't say on a daily basis, about seeing and understanding peace. It has allowed me to see it maybe going from the macro to the micro level, where I see small pieces of peace in life and make that connection in terms of, for example, we wound up doing, I hosted a program on, does climate change threaten peace? And there was also a program we did on, can water negotiations around the world point the way to peace? And I don't know if I ever would have thought about those global issues and bringing it to the level of thinking about peace between communities and nations and individuals. So it's just been the surprising discovery of how we can look at, you know, for me, I like small pieces of peace. I like saying that and making the connection that you're talking about, Paul. Mm-hmm. It happens all the time. And I'd love to hear from listeners who...
We do. We have a few callers. Let's go to Scott in Albuquerque. Good morning, Scott. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks. I had a comment and then a question. And my comment was that I love the Peace Talks radio show. I've been listening to it for a long time. And I wish that either it would get produced more, or KUNM would play it more often, because I think it's really just a wonderful show. So thank you for that. And my question was, in hearing the story of how Peace Talks Radio came about, as a, you know, kind of a response to 9/11, I've recently sort of formed a group, I guess, with some people locally as a response to the Newtown shootings. In a very similar way, kind of bringing people together to, you know, mourn, but then also talk about what are we going to do? How are we going to make a difference? Many of us are parents. We have small children. You know, I think that tragedy really struck home for a lot of people. And we've talked about doing some different things. One thing that we've talked about doing is having some kind of like a peace fair, a peace party or something like that in a local park. And but what I'm wondering from the folks on the show is if they can speak to how to keep a group like that going, how to keep that momentum going, how to add some longevity to it, because obviously Peace Talks Radio, you know, started small like that and has, you know, survived all these years and has really taken off. And like I said, I think it's just an amazing resource. And so I'm wondering if you have any you know, ideas or thoughts on how to kind of keep the momentum of this little group that I've become involved with going.
Well, first of all, congratulations for that, and I hope that can we get your email to Carol, because we are working on, you know, a program.
What we'll do is we'll have you hang on the line after you've made your comment. Just don't hang up, okay?
Okay.
And our producer will get your information.
Okay. Oh, that'd be great.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. How to keep it going. I just think that you do a little bit every week on a project like that. We interviewed Nobel Peace Prize laureate Jody Williams. Carol talked with her when she was at a conference years ago. She's kind of a hard-nosed character in a way, you know, and she says, basically, get off your butt and do something, you know. I don't care what you do, just do something. And even if you're just doing an hour a month toward an organization, then do that. If you're taking your own personal project, though, just set some parameters about how to fit it into your other worlds, and just make sure that you're moving it forward a little bit in a methodical way. As far as the Peace Talk story goes, we volunteered for 2 years, but we did set up a nonprofit organization so that we could accept contributions, because we thought that if people heard about and believed what we were doing, mostly friends and family at first, that they would start sending us some contributions. We are independent from KUNM in that way, so that we are our own nonprofit organization called Good Radio Shows Incorporated. And of course, that support has built once you've done some work and had some events and proven your mettle, as it were, then I think you can start going to some foundations who support peace work. There aren't enough of them out there. We've been blessed here in New Mexico to have the support of the McCune Charitable Foundation in several of our seasons. Also, the Oppenheimer Brothers Foundation has been a wonderful supporting entity for several years now. People find out about what you do. You take responsibility for spreading the word a little bit. Maybe you can get some of the support that you need to create the events and the programs that you believe in.
Let's take another call.
Yeah.
Suzanne, did you have a comment?
Well, I do. Scott, thank you so much for calling, because I really believe that everyone could do something. People looked at us and said, oh, well, you're in KUNM, you can do this. But really, everyone can do something, and so it's awesome you're doing something. I would say two P's. One, keep it positive. So often we're like, oh, Columbine, you know, or negative, or Newtown, or negative. Well, just keep it positive. Your piece here is a great idea. And the second P is priority. Always make it a priority that you do something, like Paul said, a little bit every month. And don't expect that people are going to just rush to you. Just keep it positive and make it a priority. Thanks.
Let's take another call. Joan in Albuquerque. Good morning, Joan. You're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I have been listening to Peace Talks for a couple, for some time, and I think it's great. One question or one idea I got was, I'm sure I got it from Peace Talks, was that you can teach peace in the schools. And I was just wondering if anything was going on. I mean, I think that, if there could be a little bit of awareness of what people can do to encourage peace, maybe at elementary school, junior high school. And it just seems to me I got that idea from Peace Talks, and I was just wondering if anything was going on in New Mexico.
Go ahead, Carol.
Yeah, I don't know the names or what schools, but I think that has been happening to some degree in New Mexico, and maybe, Paul, you have some specifics that you can think of?
I don't have a lot. I mean, we did a program on Youth Voices once, and I know that there was a program at the Universalist Unitarian Church where they had peace programs for young kids. We interviewed some of them, and I have some clips of them we could listen to later, but it's just amazing, you know, what those young people came up with. I'd like to hear more about what's going on, but I don't know.
Well, and what does teaching peace look like in a classroom?
Well, let me bring together some of the things that we've talked about, because one of the shows that Carol did that was particularly moving also speaks to this business about keeping it positive, forgiveness, personal responsibility. In January of 1995, a fellow named Azim Kamisa, who was an investment banker in San Diego. His son, Tariq, who was in his young 20s, he was shot and killed by a 14-year-old gang member who'd been challenged by his gang to shoot into a car, and he happened to shoot into the pizza delivery car that Tariq Kamisa was in, and Tariq died. The 14-year-old, Tony Hicks, was sentenced to prison. So Tariq's dad is Azim Kamisa, and instead of pursuing any revenge against the killer's family, he ended up teaming up with Tony Hicks's grandfather to start teaching nonviolence courses in the schools in San Diego at first, and now he's doing it all around the country. He set up a foundation, and over the years, they've just reached tens of thousands of students in programs that he described to Carol, and we're going to listen to that one right now. It's number one, Marshall.
We have six key messages that we try and impart in these live assemblies.
In this era of media and video games with images that are filled with guns and violence that are so pervasive in this culture and are so attractive to youth, how is making good choices and nonviolent choices presented in a way that draws them in, that is appealing to young students and something that they want to actually do?
Well, that's a very good question. You're right. The violence is extremely pervasive. We are by far the most violent first world nation in the world. By the time our kids get to grade A, they've seen 100,000 images of violence. But I started with a very simple premise, that violence is a learned behavior. Nobody was born violent. None of our children were born violent. But if you accept that violence is a learned behavior, nonviolence can also be a learned behavior. But who teaches it? At TKF, we do teach it. And let me answer your question by an example. We have a lesson on empathy. And empathy is a big word in some of these middle schools, so we usually have a theme. And the theme on empathy is, I don't know you till I walk a mile in your shoes, and you don't know me till you walk a mile in my shoes. And this was a seventh grader. His name was Alex, in seventh grade, and had all the signs, the swear, the encounter, the colors. You could see a wannabe gang member written all over this kid. And somehow this lesson on empathy got to him. And then the homework is that they have to practice empathy for the whole week. And the week after, before they get their lesson on compassion, they ask to share their homework on empathy. And when the teacher asked who wants to share their lesson on empathy, it was Alex. Now remember, this is a kid, this is the most disruptive kid in the class. And what he shared that day was very powerful. And what he said is, I was walking in my hood last weekend, and this kid gave me a dirty, angry look. The rules of the hood are, if a kid gives you a dirty, angry look, you go beat him up. But because you taught me that you don't know me till you walk a mile in my shoes, and I don't know you till I walk a mile in your shoes, I walked up to this kid and said, why are you giving me a dirty look? So the kid said to me, I'm not giving you a dirty look. I'm angry because my brother was shot and killed last night. So what did you do, Alex? I held his hand. We cried together. I gave him a hug. I told him, I know how you feel because I lost my uncle 6 months ago. One lesson. And you think that this kid walks the hood every weekend. Tell me you can't teach nonviolence. You see the power of this. What could have been a fight became a compassionate action, you know? One of the key messages we teach is that from conflict, love and unity are possible.
A clip from this interview that Carol Boss did. You'll have to remind me Azim, the names,
Azim,
Paul.
Azim Kamisa.
Azim Kamisa. I just recently watched the movie Gandhi, which of course has several really detailed scenes on teaching nonviolence, where he's teaching people how to be nonviolent in the face of violent conflict. And this particular show is the one that this is the one. This is the one that I remember listening to as it was airing on KUNM.
I saw you right after that show.
And I believe I cried at a certain point because this, the way that this father had dealt with the grief and the sorrow at the loss of his son was to stop that cycle of violence and to try to perpetuate a nonviolent outcome.
Well, he said, victims at both ends of the gun, and recognizing that a 14-year-old gang member who was being challenged to shoot certainly had to take some responsibility for his actions, but he says that basically that's the product of a culture of violence that we all have a responsibility to do something about. And I think that's part of the message of Peace Talks Radio. And we keep presenting little vignettes, places where we can think about how we can apply peaceful mindfulness. And it's sort of like buying a car. You know, you don't need to buy a car. You don't need to pay attention to the ads until you're ready to buy a car. But when you hear that we'll do a program about how to be a more peaceful consumer or how to live on Earth in an environmentally way that is more peaceful, you know, then you realize that all around you, every day, moment to moment, there is ongoing opportunity for all of us to be more peaceful, and that has an impact ultimately.
Let's take another call. Chris in Albuquerque. Good morning, Chris. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. I was calling in response to the question about teaching peace in schools. And my thought was that it's not always teaching like a class or a lecture, that anytime you can instill and install a program for students, primarily this is done in middle schools and high schools, but it can certainly be done in elementary schools where the students are participating in student court, peer tribunals, or mediation-type programs where students review and work with the person, quote-unquote, in trouble who's had some offense and come up with a solution rather than a teacher or principal or administrator, that is really peace in action.
You know, Chris, I believe that some of the elementary schools, at least they did a few years ago, have programs where students actually get to be mediators and they're out on the playground and are actually putting some of the things they learn into action and trying to diffuse arguments, et cetera, amongst children when they're out on recess time.
We also have a couple email comments. One from Megan, who says she just wanted to say how much she loved the Star Trek show. She says, so many people write off sci-fi as fluff or fantasy, but it's a genre where weighty questions like peace and conflict and human nature are highlighted much, much more effectively than in some other film or TV genres. That comment from Megan. Another comment from Tim. Peace Talks discussions and links to guests they featured over the years have proved quite helpful in work in the mental health field. An idea touched on by one of today's callers suggests the idea of growing peace work by networking among people who have been influenced by what they heard. He says, I'm referring to the caller who said he'd started a local group. Can Peace Talks also be a catalyst to help their listeners connect with each other?
Yeah, that's a great idea. There are far too many great ideas and far too little time and resources really to get to all of them. But we're really open to those ideas because I think we all are looking at another 10 years of Peace Talks Radio to try to be able to see what more we can do.
Do you have a Facebook page?
We have a Facebook page. We tweet occasionally. Mm-hmm. We have Twitter
that might
pages,
be a place to like the Peace Talks Radio Facebook page, and you may be able to find other fans in that way and on comments on the page.
Yeah, that's always great, and I bet we can tap into that a little bit more. There could be also, at the end of each episode page on our website, we do have a list of resources, and we try to keep that up to date. But there are some other things that we can do, and I really appreciate the suggestion about that.
Let's take another call. Ali in Albuquerque. Good morning, Ali. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I have to apologize right away if I'm going to be not very clear, because I am a victim of a traumatic brain injury and it has affected my mental capabilities. I'm calling actually oddly, just ironically, this morning I have felt somewhat depressed, and I was actually talking with a good friend here about that. But anyway, I'm wondering, Paul, and Carol, have you had us? And I'm sorry, I don't know the other person, but anyway, your wife, Paul. Anyway, ex-wife. I'm not sure about if you have done a show. I'm calling not having listened to your show enough over the last 10 years, and I really apologize because your show is so important. I wish it was on regularly at KONM instead of once a month. But anyway, have you done a show on victims of traumatic brain injury as well as victims of violence along with that, and how it affects the people with traumatic brain injuries' lives, and how do they get along? How do they get along with conflict resolution that's affected their sense of being lost ever since, and lost in contact with the were lost with people as a result of the traumatic brain injury, difficulties in communicating or connecting with people previous in life, loss of our uncertainty where to go, and what I'm really trying to get at, oh yes, domination of in the name of support. Not only, I mean, to some extent, bureaucracy from government systems of supposed support.
Hello?
I think we might have just lost Ali, but I'll go.
So already on traumatic brain injury.
Oh, there we go.
And,
hey,
and
Ali.
If there's a possibility, you might do.
Yeah.
I'm going to pause you right there and put some of your questions to Suzanne and Paul and Carol. Traumatic brain injury, how does that affect people's ability to kind of process some of the things we've been talking about? Does that, I mean, is there any kind of evidence that people with traumatic brain injuries have more or less capacity to do these kinds of nonviolent communication strategies, or to learn the kinds of lessons that the students are able to learn?
Well, it's an interesting question. Ali, you can probably tell from hearing me that I sound really different. It's because I had an AVM, which is an arterial venous malformation. It's a form of a TBI, which is a traumatic brain injury. I think Paul will be able to speak to if we've done a show like this. I don't think we've done one, specifically on TBI, and it would be really interesting. I don't know if anyone has done the research on this. Paul, do you know?
Well, there's been a lot of research done on it, and I think it's an interesting topic for a show because I think that particularly in sort of a spin out from some of the shows that we've done on brain science, it would be interesting to take a look at the subset of the population that has had to deal with that. You know, Suzanne is familiar with the story of Jill Bolt Taylor, who had a brain hemorrhage and wrote a book that focused on sort of her journey through that and experiencing of peace and coming back from that. I think it's an interesting idea for us to look at. We have done programs on veterans dealing with PTSD, a very dramatic program that Carol did, looking at a program that took veterans back to Vietnam to actually meet their former enemies. So it's a rich area, and I really appreciate Ali's personal story, because I know him, and he's come back in a very brave way from a very difficult place, and all the folks that have things like that happen to them are tremendously courageous and do have, you know, different challenges emotionally and in the society. So I think it's a good thing to look at.
Let's take another call. Clifton in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Taking the call. Thanks for doing this show on the other show. And a specific comment is that, you know, for 10 years now, you guys have been doing something difficult, swimming, if you will, Paul, upstream, while all of the other media tend to leverage our prurient and negative, and I don't mean to overstate it, instincts to pay attention to what might harm us. You guys are asking us to pay attention to forming new neural connections, if you will, in terms of being peaceful. And so you've already addressed it with Ali. I was going to ask if you had done any shows specific to, you know, how the mind works. And furthermore, it seems to me one of the things that you guys are doing is asking people to sort of take conscious control of our own evolution. And so that's the other question, you know, tying those two things together. Have you done a show that said that, that specifically in, well, I guess specifically just asks us to look at the personal choices and talks about how we can rewire our brains consciously?
Yeah, I think so. We have done a program called The Neuroscience of Compassion. Before I forget, though, since there have been so many references to shows we've done, the way to find them on our website is to go to peacetalksradio.com, peacetalksradio.com. And from our homepage, there's a Peace Talks episode list. Now, they are organized chronologically. Currently, there is a master episode list in the making that will make it easier to search it. But if you're looking for a particular one that we have talked about, click through each of the years from 2003 all the way up to the current year, and you'll be able to see each year's output, and you'll be able to recognize the shows that we've talked about. So The Neuroscience of Compassion, I think, is one that I would refer you to. Also, Taking the Third Side with William Urey that we did a program on in 2010. The Neuroscience of Getting Along is another one that featured Daniel Goleman. I think those are good places where some of those issues were addressed.
I'll post links to those specific programs that we've discussed during the show on KUNM.org after the show also. Mm-hmm. Let's take one more call this morning. Anne in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. And thank you, Paul.
And just as a thought, Anne, we're right up at the end of the show, so
then,
as succinct
the really
as possible.
The important thing I want to say is that the Southern Poverty Law Center does a program called Teaching Tolerance, which they provide to schools. And although it isn't specifically peace, I think that once children learn to be tolerant, their lives will be more peaceful. And so the Southern Poverty Law Center is in Birmingham, Alabama, and it's been there a long time, and they still do that program. You can find them online.
You know, we also had our last Peace Talk show was on restorative justice, and we don't have time to go into that, but it has to do with programs that are being brought that people are doing through the courts and also in schools. And we talked about a program in Oakland, California, West Oakland, California, where similar things are happening.
So that this Peace Talks Radio, the show, is a great resource for folks who are wondering, how do I do this, that, and the other with respect to peace? Thanks to the three of you for joining us today. Congratulations on the prizes you have won over this decade producing this show. Paul Ingalls and Suzanne Kreider, co-founders of Peace Talks Radio and producers of the show, and Carol Boss, producer of the show. I really appreciate your time today. You will be able to tune in to hear the podcast of this show on our website, KUNM.org. Just a few minutes after the show is over, we'll post that audio. Next week on the KUNM Collins Show, sequester or not? We'll examine the fallout of the sequestration crisis with updates on what the final outcome means for New Mexicans. Will we see layoffs of federal employees, cuts to programs, or will lawmakers in Washington hammer out a deal to avert the automatic across-the-board spending cuts, and what would that look like? That's next week, next Thursday morning at 8 o'clock on the KUNM Call-In Show. We'll hope you tune in. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks for joining us.